Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the Twitter at Mike Golic Jr. and at Chris Canty 99. And Gojo, we got a huge divisional round matchup between the Rams and the Bucks coming up now. Of course, the Rams were able to get at Tampa in their week three matchup, taking them to the woodshed. But we need somebody else to shed a little more light on the divisional round matchup we got coming up on this Sunday. So for that, we're going to go out to the hotline and bring on Kirk Morrison, ESPN LA 710 host and pre- and post-game analyst for the LA Rams. And Kirk, I wanted to ask you, how much confidence is this Rams team taking from their regular season win over the Bucks into this matchup on Sunday?
You know, Chris, honestly, I believe they're not taking much confidence from that game because they feel like they're a different team. So they're more excited to go out and just play and see what they can do against Tampa Bay this time around, because they feel like back all the way in week three, this is a much different team. Matthew Stafford threw for over 350 yards plus four touchdowns, zero interceptions. And remember, that was without Von Miller and Odell Beckham and Cam Akers. These are three guys who are now part of this Rams team that didn't play in that first matchup. So they were like, hey, we know how we played in the first matchup, but let's be real. This is a different team that we've now assembled going into this divisional round. So they're just more confident of what they have as a nucleus now than more so what they played with in that first matchup versus the Buccaneers.
Kirk, obviously a guy that was there for that first one was Matthew Stafford, their prized possession from this offseason. And he got that first postseason win last week. Is there a weight lifted off his shoulders now? Is this a guy you think is going to play looser because of that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, that was the narrative. But I always say in the NFL, a lot of times we don't just the narratives don't go away. Just you shift the goalposts a little bit because it's like, oh, he had never won a playoff game. Well, he won one. Well, you know, he's never won an away game in the playoffs, right? Because that's honestly what's up next for him. So, you know, it's like you go from one to another. But no, it was a huge weight I think lifted off his shoulders because he kept hearing the narrative throughout his career. And so now that's gone, you move on and just say, hey, let's just go out there and play. And it's crazy to think that it's one of those group projects where he didn't have to do a ton. You know, the whole group got an A, but he only threw the ball 17 times. That's the least amount of time that he's thrown when he started and ended a football game. He had never had that in his 13-year career. So to say that, you know, winning and losing is a quarterback stat, I think last week kind of proves it, that you don't have to do much in order to get a win. He got a win. But I think it's now moving on to, hey, guess what? You got to go against the greatest quarterback of all time in Tom Brady. You don't have to out-duel him, but you just got to hope that your team plays just as well and you do your part and not turn the football over.
Kirk, looking at the X's and O's in this matchup, in the first game that these two teams played in the regular season, it was clear that Sean McVay wanted to open up the set. He went with a lot of empty looks. I want to say 14 or 15 empty looks, empty snaps in that game. And it was clear that Todd Bowles didn't have a lot of answers for it, and he didn't pressure that look all too much. And so I'm wondering, are they anticipating a little more aggressiveness from that Bucs defense, a little more blitzing going into this matchup on Sunday?
Well, I think the weakness for the Buccaneers going into the season was their secondary. I mean, we know about the linebackers, David and obviously Devin White, and then up front, Shaq Barrett. You know, we know about JPP, Vita Vea, the guys up front. So if there was any weakness, it would be the secondary. And so when people say Todd Bowles didn't blitz a lot, he had better not blitz, because now you're putting out there on an island some quarterbacks against Cooper Kupp and at the time Robert Woods, Van Jefferson. So that's what he didn't want to put his team in. And I think even more so now, he's going to have to rely on his rush. He needs Vita Vea. He needs JPP. He needs Shaq Barrett. He's going to need Devin White to have to blitz. So he may have more interior pressure, you know, more from the front seven than maybe from the back end, because that's going to be the hard part, is for these cornerbacks to have to go man-to-man on the guy who won the Triple Crown in Cooper Kupp in terms of yards, catches, and also receiving touchdowns. And, oh, by the way, we saw Monday night, the guy wearing number 3 for the Rams, Odell Beckham Jr., still one of the best in the game. And so how do you handle going between zone and in man-to-man with what the Rams present to you? It is difficult. And then you throw in a young back in Cam Akers, who just 5.5 months removed from, you know, Achilles surgery showed you that he is still a weapon, and the Rams have a new toy within their offense. So it's a going to be a battle. It is Sean McVay versus Todd Bowles on Sunday, man. So I'm excited for that matchup just to see what does Todd have, what does Sean McVay have. It's going to be a fun one.
Kane Angola Jr. talking to Kirk Morrison from ESPN 710 LA. You can catch him as the host for the Rams pre- and post-game, analyzing that. And, Kirk, let's go to the matchup on the other side, because you mentioned Matthew Stafford doesn't have to out-duel or play against Tom Brady, but Raheem Morris, the defensive coordinator for the Rams, is going to have to. And we saw them able to have success in that first matchup. We know some different personnel for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on offense since that time. So what's going to be the key for Raheem Morris and that unit in getting at Tom Brady and the Bucs?
Well, I think, first of all, you got to find out the inactives. That's going to be the biggest part first if you're Raheem Morris, because the inactives will tell you, do the Buccaneers have their all-pro right tackle Tristan Wirfs available? Also, their center, Ryan Jensen. If those two players are out, you do have to adjust your game plan, because the one thing that we've seen from Tom Brady that does affect him in his career is when he's not able to step up in the pocket. Look, Chris, you know this. Edge pressure doesn't do anything to Tom Brady. He just steps up. He manipulates the pocket. That's great. But when Tom Brady has to go east and west in the pocket, not necessarily what he wants to do. He wants to step up. He wants to buy more time and get the ball down the field. So that's why I think the big thing for Raheem Morris is who is going to be out on that offensive line, because that's where you can figure that Aaron Donald, if he's not going against Ryan Jensen, he may have himself a field day up front. So that's what I'm looking for, right, Raheem Morris. And remember, they're still down their safeties right now. Jordan Fuller, who actually intercepted Tom Brady in the previous in the meeting back in 2020, he's not available. He is out for the year. Eric Weddle played in that position a little bit last week. So for Raheem Morris, man, a lot of it is honestly going to predicate his game plan on Tom, is what I think the offensive line looks like for the Buccaneers come Sunday.
Talking with former NFL linebacker Kirk Morrison. And, Kirk, I'm glad that you talked about the back end of that Rams defense, because I wanted to ask you, how do you anticipate Raheem Morris deploying Jalen Ramsey? Is this a situation where he's going to have him shadow Mike Evans, or are they going to continue to do what they do and play mostly zone coverage on the back end?
I think you'll get a little bit of both. I think at times, yes, he will shadow Mike Evans, who I think is, the biggest threat for that offense for the Buccaneers. But I could possibly see Jalen Ramsey in certain situations maybe going one-on-one with Rob Gronkowski. I don't care what Rob looks like during the year, but playoff Rob Gronkowski is a animal. He is a monster to deal with. And for some reason, Tom Brady seems to trust him more and find Rob Gronkowski more in the playoffs. We saw it last year even in the Super Bowl. So that's what I see, maybe the situation of Jalen Ramsey putting him on Mike Evans when needed, and then maybe switching him on Gronk here on some critical down and distances. But I think overall, not having Antonio Brown, not having Chris Godwin, remember, those guys were available in the first matchup. Those guys are not available. So just as much as we talked a little bit about Todd Bowles and how he will adjust, you know, what does Raheem Morris do now that he doesn't have to worry about two all-pro type wide receivers? And also the running game. Will Leonard Fournette play? What about, you know, Ronald Jones? Keyshawn Vaughn, a good back, but this ain't the Philadelphia Eagles, man. They was running through them Eagles like it was nothing last week. Totally different defense. So it is something that I want to wonder, what does Raheem Morris do throughout the game for Jalen Ramsey, who at times you put him on a guy, but all the time, hey, let's just play it straight up. So I want to see how they go for throughout the game.
An incredible test for this Rams team against the defending champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Kurt, we always appreciate you giving us some time, man. Enjoy the game this weekend, and I'm sure we'll catch up with you soon.
Chris and Gojo. I like that. All right. Nice to be with y'all always. Talk to y'all later.
Check out Kurt on ESPN LA 710 and the analyst for the Rams pre- and post-game there out in Los Angeles. Lots to look forward to in that one as we continue marching on with the divisional round. But coming up next, we heard from one quarterback today that next year he wants to get back and show his true self. Chris Canty will tell you why he believes that is still not going to be nearly good enough. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. You could save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat. Visit progressive.com. Who's the best quarterback left in the playoffs? That's what we want you to chime in on the call-in line. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. But Gojo, speaking of quarterbacks, there's a quarterback in Cleveland that loves the sound of his own voice, and Baker Mayfield, he just happens to be that dude, man. So we saw on social media that Baker Mayfield posted that his surgery went great, was a complete success, and now he says it's on the road to recovery, and it's one of those steps to get back to his true self. He says, this is not the end to my story. Now, Gojo, you know I have some strong feelings about this, but I'm going to give you first crack at Baker Mayfield and what you thought of the commentary he posted on social media yesterday.
I can say, I'll give Baker first crack at this one. We will let him speak in his own words here, mostly because I know hearing the sound of Baker's voice is going to do nothing but charge Chris Canty up. So here was Baker's message on social media from yesterday.
Hey, everybody, just wanted to check in. Surgery went great. Was a complete success. Had a great medical team that took care of me and checked that box off to get this fixed. And now it's on the way to, you know, the road to recovery. This is one of those steps to get back to my true self. This past year hasn't been very easy. A lot of stuff has gone down, and it wasn't easy on me or my family. So I appreciate everybody that's reached out, that wished me well and good luck on the surgery, all the prayers and everything. It definitely did not go unnoticed. So thank you. Thanks to everybody that's helped out so far. Now it's on the way to the road to recovery. It's not going to be an easy one, but it's going to be one that I'm going to remember, and it's going to be a special one. So I'll keep you guys updated. Thank you so much. But this is not the end of my story. It's just going to be one of those little things that I'll look back and remember, that it's one of those challenges that and adversity that I'm going to try and take advantage of, and it'll make me a better person. So thank you for everybody that's reached out. Once again, let's go get it.
Baker Mayfield's true self. So that's going to be really the big takeaway from all this, Chris. And if I am a Cleveland fan that's trying to be optimistic, we all know the popular saying Netflix and chill. If I am Baker Mayfield, my true self in 2022, the best version for the Cleveland Browns, would be commercials and quiet. Keep being the best acting quarterback when it comes to commercials, television, and otherwise in the NFL. And then go back to what we saw in 2020. That was not a quarterback that made a ton of noise. That was not a guy that we heard all of the extracurricular about stuff going on in the locker room, the complaints in the media, all these different things. Chris, the best version of him is that, and then maybe in this offense. We know Kevin Stefanski laid that groundwork in 2020. They were successful and got to the postseason. And this last year took a little bit of a hit. The system didn't accommodate for a guy in Odell Beckham Jr. who now seems to be thriving in Los Angeles. So maybe the true version of Baker Mayfield is what he's been clamoring for. A few more of those spread sets, him in the shotgun, a little more empty. The stuff he was used to at Oklahoma that allowed him to go be a playmaker in the way he felt comfortable. Maybe that is what he means by that, Chris. But that's the only thing I can come back to, is maybe this week goes back to commercials and quiet for Baker Mayfield.
So essentially what Baker Mayfield would be saying, if you're reading in between the lines properly, is that he knows better than head coach and de facto offensive coordinator Kevin Stefanski. Because all those things that you're saying are not things that are foreign concepts to Stefanski. But I know that their head coach has a game plan that he feels like put his team in the best position to be successful, and that is having that offense run through the running game, that offensive line, and those two-headed monster that they have in the backfield with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And then Baker Mayfield, off of favorable looks and play action, being able to take shots downfield for chunk plays. That has been a formula that led Cleveland to the playoffs 2 years ago, and it didn't necessarily work out this year because we know their quarterback was dealing with some issues, some injuries, and that affected his production. Now, the one thing that I will say about the whole true self comment, Gojo, what I know about adversity is that it reveals character. And production on the field aside, what I saw in the way of leadership and how Baker interacted with his teammates in the locker room, and then the reaction from the locker room when the organization decided to part company with OBJ, and then some of the commentary that we saw from Baker and his inner circle during that time in criticizing the rest of the team, criticizing the organization, that's not where you want your starting quarterback to live. That's not the leadership intangibles that the Cleveland Browns organization thought they were getting when they took him number one overall in 2018, a draft that included Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. This is not what they signed up for. The quarterback creates a lot more noise rather than the quarterback being able to quiet down all of the noise. And that has been my biggest issue with Baker Mayfield throughout the course of his NFL career. Can he get back to the quarterback that had a top 10 QBR in 2020? Possibly, but the only way that that happens is that the passing game for the Browns is complementary to their running game. That's how this team is built. That's how they have to have success, because they understand the limitations of their quarterback, Baker Mayfield, even when he is healthy. He's not going to wow you with his arm talent. He's not going to wow you with his ability to move around, manipulate the pocket, and extend the downs. He's just not that kind of quarterback. The value that Baker has to add to this franchise is being a part of changing the culture. And so far, the way that things have shifted this season, I'm not too confident that Baker Mayfield is going to be able to recapture the confidence of his teammates or the confidence of the organization in terms of the long-term future for their quarterback.
Yeah, it's hard to forget what we saw this year. The off-the-field stuff matters a ton. The way that resonates, and it's doubly so because, man, right there in the division, you saw everything. Dominique Foxworth tweeted it a few weeks ago. Everything the Browns thought Baker was going to be is exactly what Joe Burrow is in Cincinnati.
Yep.
That's got to sting a little bit extra because it's right next to you here. We want to hear from you, 888-SAY-ESPN. Let's go to Scott in Virginia. Scott, you're on Caney and Golic Jr. What are your thoughts on Baker?
Can you hear me?
Yep, we got you, Scott. What's up?
I've got a torn labrum in my right shoulder, and the only thing it prevents me from doing is getting the detergent off the top shelf. That's just an excuse for him. It's in it, not even in his throwing arm. There's no way that that's really affecting him that much. He's just using it as an excuse to not, you know, he had poor performances here, and that's his excuse.
Yeah, Scott, we appreciate the call. I don't know if you doing laundry and playing professional football, the most important position in the sport, are necessarily comparable at all. I appreciate that view. You've got it yourself in that spot, though. Chris, I'm in between on this one because, listen, we need to factor that into Baker's performance. The issue you and I both had is just how much of it we heard from Baker publicly in all this, because that never plays well with anyone involved. Guys see it every day in the locker room. You know this. You played with plenty of injury throughout your time in the NFL. We all see everyone walking into the training room. We know what it takes for dudes to get out there on Sunday every week. And we know Baker Mayfield was dealing with some contract things that he was trying to stay ahead of. But it's just never going to play well if it's coming out and being talked about that much.
Yeah, you don't get points for going out there and playing poorly and then blaming your poor play on the injury. You don't. And I think that's what Baker was caping for throughout the course of the regular season and some of the post-game comments that he made. And then on top of that, he had his wife trying to come and have his back. And in the process, throwing a lot of his teammates under the bus, questioning their toughness. Those are not things that you want your quarterback to be doing. That's not what you want your franchise guy to be engaged in. It's just not. And so the Cleveland Browns have a very difficult decision when it comes to the long-term future of Baker Mayfield. If I was them, I wouldn't be in a hurry to give this guy a contract extension. I want to see how he handles this offseason, the rehabilitation of his shoulder, but more importantly, the offseason interaction that he has with his teammates. Because he's going to have to be around the facility. He's going to have to be around the building rehabbing that shoulder. And his teammates seeing that level of commitment and then trying to repair some of the relationships that he has within the organization, within the locker room, I think that's going to be paramount in terms of determining his long-term future as a Cleveland Brown.
Coming up next, whose best self at quarterback makes them the best quarterback in the postseason remaining? We'll get to that and more after we get to this word from Wendy's. Now, right now, actually, at Wendy's, you can see what all the hype's about with their new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. We're talking real natural cut potatoes, perfectly sprinkled in sea salt, and guaranteed to be hot and crispy down to the very last fry. Or they'll replace them. These aren't just the typical fries you add to a meal. No, no, no. These are fries worth adding a meal to. Abandon the old, cold, and soggy, and head on over to Wendy's today, where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy. At participating U.S. Wendy's, back after this, Caney and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Caney and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Who is the best quarterback in the playoffs? Get at us on the call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's the question we want you guys to answer. But, Mike, with the divisional round at hand, I feel like it's time that we run through a few questions that we might have, maybe some superlatives that we want to hand out to some players and some coaches that are going to be competing this weekend.
Yeah, lots to look at here, lots of matchups to dissect. So let's set the table for the weekend that's getting ready to come here. Devin, cue the music.
Oh, how great is that?
God,
how great is that? Classic battle? Oh,
yo, I'm about to hit someone in slow motion right now. The greatest feeling here. Every NFL film soundtrack. Shannon Penn, our producer, is getting ready to hop on the mic, and bad hip and all might headbutt somebody in the studio.
All right, here we go, guys. Mike, I will start with you. Since Chris threw out the question earlier, I'll ask you, who is the best QB left in the playoffs? What you got?
I'm going to go with the presumptive MVP, man. I know Tom Brady has been here, done that 1,000 times. But what Aaron Rodgers has done this season, we know his hallmark's been efficiency, some of the greatest seasons in NFL history and touchdown to interception ratio. But, Chris, the variety of ways I have seen that team win this year, because you've got 12 on the field, as the rest of that lineup is circulated, I think he's plugged the holes well this year. I'll rock with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, it's hard to argue Aaron Rodgers, but listen, we wouldn't have a show if we didn't argue or disagree with a couple of things. I'm not going to even go with Tom Brady, Gojo. I'm going to go with a guy that we saw had the highest single-game passer rating of any quarterback that has played this season, and that will be one Josh Patrick Allen. That's right. I'm doing it. The Buffalo Bills quarterback had a 157.3 rating. I'm rolling with him. I think he's the best quarterback that's left in the playoffs. If we're just going to boil it down to physical attributes, there's no quarterback that has more elite-level athleticism and arm talent than Josh Allen. That's just what it is. The only question is whether or not he's going to be able to string together a stretch of games that's going to put his team at a championship level. I believe that he will this time going into Arrowhead, playing in the playoffs. He's got a bone to pick. He's got an axe to grind with the Kansas City Chiefs after how they got handled in that AFC championship game. And I think he gets his axe. I think he finishes it off the way he wants to this weekend. Josh Allen, best quarterback left in the playoffs.
Getting out in front of it. Look at him go right now. Listen, if he plays like he did last – Chris, if he plays like he did last week, you're not going to be wrong when this is all said and done. So this, get ready to cut that sound, Shannon.
All right, Chris, let's head to your side of the ball. Which team has the best defense entering the divisional round of the playoffs?
Oh, boy. Listen, man, it's hard to argue with the Buffalo Bills and what they've done. It's hard to do that. But I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going with – the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. I am, and I know that there's a little bit of recency bias based on how they handled the Philadelphia Eagles and knowing Jalen Hurts can't throw the ball down the field, but I don't care because I trust in that front seven to shut down the run game, make teams one-dimensional, and then I trust that pass rush, that front four, to be able to get after opposing quarterbacks. So you can't exploit the deficiencies that they have on the back end of that defense. But let's also keep in mind, they do have a couple of playmakers on the back end of that defense in Antoine Winfield and in Carlton Davis. So I'm rolling with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. They're the champs until somebody proves otherwise.
I respect the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense, and I'm with you. We're going to tick off a lot of Bills Mafia. Christine Lisi, if you're out there and listening right now, the Bills defense is incredible. I just saw Dan Orlovsky call them the best back seven in the NFL, and statistically across the board that they are. But you mentioned, this time of year, I put the premium on pass rush. Can you get home with four? We saw that was the story of the wild card weekend, and that's why I want to rock with the Los Angeles Rams. Raheem Morris has put together masterful plan, but it starts up front. The number one team in terms of ESPN's pass rush win rate, beating the offensive lineman in under 2.5 seconds. The number three team in sacks on the season. So they're getting there and getting home often. But Chris, on the back end, it's also about keeping people out of the end zone. We mentioned that Bills secondary, first in the NFL in receiving touchdowns allowed with 12. Any guess who's second? The Los Angeles Rams at 17.
Go.
So they managed to do the job. I know they're banged up right now, and that's going to help. But I think what they're able to do up front helps offset that. And, of course, you've got Jalen Ramsey patrolling the field back there, the best defensive back in the league, bar none. Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canny. I forgot I was supposed to reset. Shannon, say more words.
All right. Last question here for you guys on NFL Divisional Round Superlatives. Mike, who is the best coach left in the playoffs? Best head coach remaining in the playoffs?
Call me crazy. I understand.
You're not crazy. You're not crazy. I know where you're going.
Him and clock management are always going to get talked about. Give me Big Red. Give me Andy Reid walking into this one. That man chasing championships the same way he chases chocolate cake. He's been here. I grew up an Eagles fan and watched that man get run out of town unfairly despite delivering them to four straight NFC titles and a Super Bowl. And all he came over and did in his second act was take Alex Smith's version of this team to the playoffs and then put Patrick Mahomes in there before most people thought he was ready and then go out there and win another Super Bowl. So I'm going to rock with Andy Reid on this one. Who you got, Chris?
I'm going with the guy that's going to win Coach of the Year. I'm going with Mike Vrabel from the Tennessee Titans, and nobody is checking for him, and everybody's selling him short in their game Saturday against the Cincinnati Bengals. That's all well and good, but give me the coach that has back-to-back division titles and is working on his third straight playoff appearance, a coach that has been able to get these guys to play at a really, really high level, play above the X's and O's, or just the sheer talent level that they have on that team. I'll take Mike Vrabel. He's shown me that they can beat upper echelon teams. They can beat the Kansas City Chiefs. They can beat the Buffalo Bills. They can beat the San Francisco 49ers. They've got wins over all of them. Over half the playoff field, they've beaten. So I'll take that coach, Mike Vrabel, as the best coach remaining in the playoff field.
Man, listen, not going to go wrong there. Mike Vrabel, a.k.a. NFL MacGyver, been making it work with whatever they've got out there for the Tennessee Titans over the course of this season. Those are our answers at ChrisCandy99, at Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter, or 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. But coming up next, if you think the Tennessee Titans have been slept on by everybody leading up to this division around, I will give you the most slept on, disrespected athlete in all of sports. Next, here, Candy and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Candy and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Candy. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Who's the best quarterback left in the playoffs? That's the conversation we want you guys to chime in on. Hit us up on the call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And Gojo, we got quite a bit to talk about with the NBA. A lot going on last night, of course, with my Lakers, them making the decision to bench Russell Westbrook. But we also had Joel Embiid go off for 50 points in 27 minutes. We had Nikola Jokic tell Joel Embiid to hold my beer as he went for a 49-point triple-double. But then we also got the news about Chicago Bulls point guard Lonzo Ball having to have surgery. So a lot going on in the NBA last night. Where do you want to start in terms of digging into all of that?
Well, I think Lonzo Ball, that more news and notes, right? The Chicago Bulls have been such a great story this season. Spent most of the year as the one seed in the Eastern Conference, outdoing a lot of folks. I thought to what they could be. DeMar DeRozan's played like a borderline MVP candidate. So this is certainly a big blow to them because Lonzo Ball, a guy who came into the league with so much noise around him, has really settled into being an incredible player for them. So hopefully the Bulls can weather that because I'd really like to continue to see those uniforms. Big time nostalgia hit as we head towards NBA playoff conversation down the back half of the season. But Chris, you were the one that brought up today Nikola Jokic's performance, and this to me feels like the perfect summary of not just Nikola Jokic, who even in an MVP season last year, people were lining up to try and find anyone else to give that thing to. The Denver Nuggets period story is no matter what they do, going out there and beating the Clippers in this way, Jokic having this game, they are undone by a player who we deem more talented, better, and more interesting in Joel Embiid, beating the Orlando Magic, who are basically punting on this entire season and praying for better days. So what is it ever going to take for us to respect Nikola Jokic or the Nuggets at this point? Because it feels impossible.
No, what it's going to take is them doing what the Milwaukee Bucks did last year and winning a championship. Because two or three seasons ago, nobody could be convinced that Milwaukee could be trusted once it came time for playoff basketball. And so Giannis had to exercise those demons, and we had to see the Bucks go on a championship run, going through the Brooklyn Nets, and then eventually the Phoenix Suns in the NBA Finals and taking care of their business. If the Bucks didn't do that, we wouldn't trust that they could win a championship, and we wouldn't necessarily believe in the superstardom and the multiple MVPs that Giannis has in the trophy case. I feel like Jokic is headed down a similar path, and it's going to take, in order to alter his career trajectory, him being able to win at the highest levels of the sport before we're actually going to believe just how good he is. I know he ranks high in all of the player efficiency categories, and in the pass that he made last night to Aaron Gordon in the corner for the go-ahead three-pointer, like there's only a handful of guys in the NBA that are capable of being able to make that pass over a seven-footer. So I give Jokic props where props are due. But at the same time, I'm not buying into the Denver Nuggets, who currently sit sixth in the Western Conference, and it feels like it's an uphill climb in terms of them being able to reach Western Conference supremacy when you look at the teams at the top. Like, are you going to sit here today and say you trust the Denver Nuggets more than you trust the Phoenix Suns or the Golden State Warriors? I'm sure not. I'm not going to do that. So I guess that's what it's ultimately going to take for us to buy into Jokic and the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, it feels tough because they've been a really good team. Like, again, everything the Chicago Bulls have been right now, we have seen the Denver Nuggets be in the last few years, right? They've been a one seed in the Western Conference. They've spent a lot of the year on top of the league. But, number one, Nikola Jokic plays a style of basketball that's not necessarily the sexiest, a guy who's going to play point center from the middle of the key and be able to do all those things. Like you said, efficiency monster, deep statistics are going to love him up, win shares per 48, all these things that we love in the game of basketball to be able to contextualize these things. But as far as the visual element of this and just what you've got to overcome name recognition-wise, because the last time I felt like people were really interested in the Denver Nuggets is when freaking Carmelo Anthony played out there. You've got the Chicago Bulls, all it takes is a little bit of that 90s nostalgia to hit, and I'm ready to buy in on those guys. I'm ready to follow them wherever this season takes us. But for the Denver Nuggets, it's always going to be easier, especially because, Chris, we're still trying to digest a world where the Phoenix Suns might be the best team in the Western Conference in the NBA, where, you know, the Utah Jazz have the best offense in basketball. Like, all of these things are already tough enough for teams that exist in that Southwest Triangle. To do it with the Denver Nuggets based on where we've seen them go and where they are right now just seems too much for us.
Well, here's the one thing I'll say, Gojo. With respect to Monty Williams, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and those guys with the Suns, are we really ready to say they're the best team in the Western Conference? I know they've got the record to show that off, but are we really ready to say that they're better than the Golden State Warriors? Because I'm not. That's not a place that I want to live. Like, I understand that we got a lot more basketball to go, and I get it. They're getting Klay Thompson back, trying to get him acclimated to their team, and that's not going to be something that happens in short order. It's going to take some time. But once we get to playoff basketball, like, the cream usually rises to the crop. And the Phoenix Suns, obviously, they ran through the West last year, but this is going to be a little bit different in terms of the competition that they're going to face in the Western Conference. And the Golden State Warriors seem like a scary proposition. Steph Curry's in a slump right now, but he's still the odds-on favorite to win the MVP, according to Caesars. And you got to think at some point down the stretch in the second half of the regular season, he's going to regain that form. So that's the team that I think is scariest in the West. And when we start looking at the teams that are going to be in the mix to compete for a championship to come out of that conference, the Denver Nuggets are on down the line.
Yeah, listen, the Denver Nuggets are far out down the line in that one. I'll say this about the Suns. It could be easy to look at them right now and say they're the best team doing all this. Mm-hmm. It could be easy right now to say that. And we know this is the ceiling we saw with that team. It is DeAndre Ayton. Whatever he wants to becomes, if he wants to play the way he did in the NBA Finals last year, that can be the best team in the Western Conference because he provides them a different element. But you're right. Obviously, we're going to fall back on the Golden State Warriors. They showed us enough in those stretches early on to say that when it comes down to it later on, again, the Suns can be better right now, but they don't give you trophies for right now. So that's what we're going to have to contend with that team going forward on this one. Chris, last one on this front here. We talked about the Lakers off the top of the show here. You're a Lakers fan. Do you have any hope at this point that the Lakers even get back to within shouting distance? The Nuggets team we're talking about, I think, is the fifth or sixth seed in the West right now.
They're
six,
the Lakers, yep.
Can the Lakers get even to that range before this is all said and done?
They can get to the sixth seed and avoid the play-in. Like, they can do that, but I will say this. I don't have a ton of confidence that they're going to be able to go on some kind of long run just because of how this team is put together. LeBron James is having an outstanding season for people that aren't paying attention. He's second in points per game behind Kevin Durant. And listen, the dude is balling out of his mind. The last 15 games the Lakers have played, he's been the high scorer in all of them. And that's not something we usually attribute to a LeBron James. It's usually more of an all-around game. But he recognizes that in with this current team, that's the role that he has to embrace. I'm not quite sure that that equates to the Lakers being able to compete for championships.
That's going to be the challenge for the Lakers heading down the stretch. We'll get to your calls, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. But coming up next, in a weekend where we saw Matthew Stafford get his first playoff win and Josh Allen light the league on fire, they still may not have had as great a weekend as our next guest here on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.